think in like South Sudan or like Africa, use their bicycles to charge their cell phones. They get there's a gentleman in India that has created an entire refrigerator out of clay that uses no electricity. Right? We don't need electricity for refrigerators anymore. So I think that's kind of what, you know, going back to cultural differences, art-related projects, things of that nature, aesthetic and appealing. Has anyone ever heard of the Apple Newton? Okay, all right. Nerd power. It's okay. Most people have not heard of the Newton because it failed miserably, but Apple created it, and then along came this guy, Mr. Jobs, and you know, we have what we have today is what's the aesthetically appealing MacBook and Apple phone and things of that nature. So also, like, you know, from a fashionista model perspective, that's why Apple does so well. You know, it uses art innovation combined with technology, and I think that also included with that, frugal innovation is definitely the course of the future to make sustainable projects.
Teresa Rayford, an organizer for Don't Shoot Portland, who headed the event on Saturday, also asked the question, what do you anticipate for black businesses in Portland, and what changes will benefit our youth positively? This question was answered by Royal Harris.
Okay, so how many people just got here? Okay, so all you new people, first, welcome. How you doing? Second of all, I'm not politically correct. So I'm gonna say this right now. For me, this discussion, I'm not caring about nobody else except black people. I respect everybody. I'm a native Oregonian. I love everybody from Oregon. At this moment, the urgency is understanding for black people, the opportunity has to be seized or you'll be squished out because it's about dollars. We can be all nice and fluffy and talk about unity and all that. We're talking about business, which means we're talking about money, which means we're talking about results. The key to economic opportunity in Portland is understanding over the next 15 years, they expect the metro area population to be 3.25 million. Now, if you crunch the numbers like a nerd, that means if you get 0.1% of the total metro population to spend $10 with you, you will have over 3,000 people spending $10 a month. What we have to do is get away from the inequality. We have to get away from the structural racism as black people. What we have to do, what's the bottom line to success? We have to prepare our children better. We have to compete harder. We have to work longer hours. And we have to demand from our kids the one thing my dad always told me, if you want fair play by yourself. We're playing, as this video showed, structural inequality was written in as what we're supposed to do. So let's quit playing like it's something fluffy that's going away. What we have to do is teach each generation how to make money, how to be a homeowner so you have something of value to leverage on, how to get that education, how to be people who produce versus consume. Because one thing I've heard in this that we don't discuss with all the technology and everything else, African Americans are the greatest collective consumers in the United States. Nobody is going to take a consumer, apologize for it, and saying that pro-black economically doesn't mean you're anti-white economically. What it means is this, we all gotta be here to play together. Competition usually leads to the best and the brightest rising to the top. All I say is, as black people, don't wait for an invitation to be the best and brightest. White people, don't be scared of black people being the best and brightest, because what it does is it creates a better, more robust Oregon economic pie.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance. Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot radio show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silentdanceparties. Doing it in the
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 4th Portland Renters Assembly and their March for Housing Rights. The assembly is on August 26th at the Midland Library from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. There will be speakers on the housing crisis and community organizing, personal stories, large and small group discussion about political strategy, but also defending and otherwise supporting each other. Snacks and childcare will be provided. The march is on August 28th. It starts at City Hall at 6 p.m. with a rally and ends at the Multnomah County Building with another assembly. The theme will be Housing Rights for All and will encompass everything from homelessness to affordable housing to tenants' rights to at-cost public housing. More information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events or portlandrentersassembly.info.
You gotta fight for your right!
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Peña Flamenca de Portland, August 30th at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. This month, La Peña's show features artists from the Bay Area and France, including Andrea La Calena, Cristo Cortez, and Ricardo Diaz y Brenna McDonald. Again, that's Peña Flamenca de Portland, August 30th at the Headwaters Theater, located at 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th, at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is John Shuck, host of Religion for Life, and this week we are going to explore spiritual maturity, levels of faith, stages of faith, and my guest is Margaret Placentra Johnston. She's the author of Faith Beyond Belief, How Good People Have Left Their Church Behind. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
We were born before the wind.
Hi, jazz lovers. This is Mike. I wanted to tell you about my new podcast that just went live on KBOO website. It's called Unsung Heroes of Jazz, where every week we'll feature an artist who recorded between the 1940s and the 1960s, so-called golden era of jazz, but for whatever reason never really got the recognition they so richly deserved. We'll tell you a little bit about them, play some of their music. Some of them you will have heard of, some of them you won't. But in all cases, they certainly deserve more recognition than they got. We think it's a different wrinkle, and we hope you'll enjoy it, and really hope you'll join us. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the African Hip Hop Caravan Benefit Show, August 29th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Columbia International Cup in Portland. All ages are welcome to this benefit show featuring Mike Crenshaw and Rashid Jamal to raise funds and awareness for their November trip to various countries in Africa. Again, that's a benefit show for the African Hip Hop Caravan on Saturday, August 29th, from 3 to 6 p.m. at Columbia International Cup, 9022 North Newman Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Peace.
It's the H-I-P to the H-O-P, it's the movement. Hip-hop caravan, it's the H-I-P to the H-O-P, it's the movement. Hip-hop caravan.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio. Coming up next is a special program of the Union's Edge, followed by Prison Pipeline at 6:30, and then at 7 is the River Signal. So please stay tuned. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting an evening with Leon Russell, Tuesday, August 11th. Tickets and information for Leon Russell are available at aladdin-theater.com.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. We enjoy your company. And every once in a while, you know, I got to tell you folks, people come on this program, they talk about some of the things that are going on, and then they get to say, you see, I told you so. And to help us do that today, we've got Bill Lonergan, president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. You know, Bill, you have been saying for a long time that, you know, some of the shenanigans going on in Kentucky, they just weren't right. You know, it wasn't politics. It wasn't hard politics, or even some of those things that we expect that are politics, but just kind of over the edge a little bit. But this time there's some smoke and some real fire, huh?
Oh, yes, Charles. It, I believe, is going to be one of the largest political scandals that we've seen in a long time. You know, Charles, I mentioned a while back on the program about the shenanigans, as we say, that were perpetrated in Iowa in 2012 during the Republican presidential primary, and the fact that a sitting state senator had taken money from both the Bachman campaign as well as the Ron Paul campaign in violation of his state's ethics laws. His name was Kent Sorensen, a so-called rising star in the party there, ended up having to resign. And he was also and has subsequently pled guilty to a number of charges. And now the grand jury had been sitting and reviewing this whole situation and have, as of the yesterday, has indicted three key political operatives, high-ranking Republican operatives, also those that are tied in with the National Right to Work for Less Committee, Charles, an organization that's been engaging in these types of political maneuvers here in the last few years. Charles, they've indicted three people. One of them is Jesse Benton, a very well-known, highly placed political operative. That's right now, he was the head of America's Liberty PAC, which was a super PAC that was set up to get Rand Paul elected president, of all things. And Mr. Benton is also the son-in-law of Ron Paul, a formerly perennial presidential candidate. And he has been, you know, active with Senator Mitch McConnell. And last year, during the primary for U.S. Senate, when the allegations about all of this activity and the potential for indictments came down, Jesse resigned from McConnell's campaign. So he was already facing this very intense criticism and scrutiny over his activities. And Charles, it was Jesse Benton and John Tate, who's also the president of Rand Paul's American Liberty PAC, and also spent 14 years with the National Right to Work Committee, a former vice president there, and a very, we'll say successful in the sense that he has gotten tons of money in business from the campaigns of Mr. Paul Sr. and Jr. So he has been indicted as well. And then finally, I hate to say my favorite, but sure, Dimitri Kasary, a character that was a longtime operative also with the National Right to Work Committee, you guessed it, and also very closely associated with Senator Rand Paul. In fact, when Rand Paul first ran, it was Mr. Kasary who shepherded him around the state and built that relationship, which resulted in Paul picking his chief of staff directly from the National Right to Work Committee as well. So Kasary has been heavily involved with this whole episode, shall we say, in Iowa, and has been implicated in the actual passing of a $25,000 check to the indicted senator as well, or the former senator, Mr. Sorensen. It's a kind of a complicated story, but it has kind of reached a kind of an apex here right now with these indictments.
Where, right. And Bill, here's what I'm thinking. You know, we keep hearing about Rand Paul, Ron Paul, McConnell. That's two sitting senators for the state of Kentucky. We keep hearing about the National Right to Work folks. Whereas, you know, any of the, you know, you over the last year have been fighting very diligently along with many other organizations to protect the people of Kentucky from this assault by the National Right to Work folks. They wanted to bring Right to Work in county by county, which is a lawless, illegal activity. And they've been advised about this, but they did it anyway. They're costing the Kentucky Anna taxpayers money by doing this. Are any of those people wrapped up in this current indictment?
Not directly. The people that were indicted are have mostly been implicated in the Iowa campaign fiasco, you know, the Republican presidential primary. But Mr. Kasary has spent time here in Kentucky working on a House race, a special election in central Kentucky, where he reportedly got paid $600 for his efforts, Charles, while he was simultaneously on the payroll of Mitch McConnell's PAC and Mitch McConnell's campaign committee to the tune of $10,000 a month. Mr. Kasary has been active, so to speak, behind the scenes, because this is not something that a lot of folks know about. But I can say that he has been here and been very active, working along with Rand Paul and with McConnell while he had engaged in all of these illegal acts, which he's now been indicted for, including conspiracy and filing false reports and, lying to a federal agency. It really is a big deal, and I have a feeling we're looking at what you might call the tip of the iceberg, Charles.
Right. The tip of the iceberg on this, and again, Bill, you know what's going to happen is when people go to court and they get convicted, guess what? Taxpayers are going to have to pay for them again to keep them in jail. You know, I mean, at what point do we have to remind people that right to work is not good for the state? I'm just saying.
Well, that's exactly right. And really what's not good for the state or the country or anything else is folks going around and trying to influence political campaigns and elections and the ultimate outcome of the creation of laws by doing things that are illegal on their face. When someone gives a state senator a check for $25,000 drawn on their wife's jewelry store account in Leesburg, Virginia, there's something wrong with that, and there are so many other elements of this that have starting to bubble up and come to light which I really feel that once more of this information comes out, more and more people are going to start asking more and more questions about what Rand Paul knew about this, about what Mitch McConnell knew about Mr. Kasary. And Charles, Kasary opened up a corporation, began a corporation called Hylas Corporation, and registered it in Delaware. Of course, Delaware is a place where the information about who runs corporations or who the actual owners or directors are is pretty limited. And he registered in Delaware, and very shortly thereafter, McConnell's campaign started writing that corporation large checks, $5,000-$10,000 checks for consulting services. And then we later find out that the person who was behind Hylas Corporation was Mr. Kasary. And it really appears that the purpose of paying through Hylas was to obfuscate or to hide the relationship or to hide the fact that Mr. Kasary was even on McConnell's payroll. And we've been looking at that issue and hoping, and I think a lot of reporters are going to start asking these questions, because when it initially came to light, McConnell's response to his staff was extremely vague. They said he was working on some sort of special project, and they certainly haven't clarified what that special project was. And now I feel that those questions need to be asked again.
Right. You know, I'm starting to think where's the line on this? Where's taxpayer funds being used? And that's a very serious question. Listen, Bill, we need to take a short break. We'll come back. We'll talk some more. We'll find out what else is going on. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge. In studio with us today, Zachary Showalter, summer intern. Yeah, working like an intern. Thank you, Zachary. We appreciate all of your help. But on the phone with us right now, we've got Bill Londrigan of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Charles. Great to be here. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, brother. We appreciate it. You know, we've been talking about some of the shenanigans that have been going on in Kentucky and elsewhere with the National Right to Work people, super PACs, dark money, sitting senators for Kentucky, McConnell and Paul. And, you know, these are the people that are trying to tell us, you union people, you shouldn't be around here. Well, it's union people that are finding out about these problems and reporting it. And we're coming to find out that it's not just down in Kentucky, but it's elsewhere too, right?
Oh, yes. And Charles, just today I became aware of an article that came out about a burglary in Rhode Island involving one of the former staffers on the Ron Paul campaign, who was a 22-year-old young man who named Jared Gamble, who unfortunately passed away from a respiratory problem, apparently. And so some mysterious donor got his parents to go to Maine for a weekend or a holiday. And during the time they were gone, the house was burglarized, and the only thing that the police chief reported being missing was Mr. Gamble's computer, Charles. And he has stated in the press that Mr. Kasary, the one we mentioned earlier just got indicted as well for his activities in Iowa, is a person that they're suspecting as a part of the burglary, Charles. And you know, you can only imagine what the purpose of that was, of course, to get Mr. Gamble's computer so that what was on there would not be disclosed. It was apparent at the time of all of this bribery of the state senator that Mr. Gamble was not happy with this activity. He, in fact, was very, very displeased with this and was aware of it. And it's plain that something on his computer was of great interest and importance for Mr. Kasary and perhaps some cohorts to get their hands on so that it would not get out. And Charles, I could just, bring that quote up to mind, the tip of the iceberg, shall we say, And it looks like the iceberg is starting to rise up out of the water a little bit each day as it goes by with these revelations. And Charles, it's amazing that this whole, story about Jesse Benton and all of the activities that have gone on hasn't been, top of the news, top headlines, that two sitting state U.S. senators have had, extensive relations with these the people that have been indicted, Rand Paul and the head of the U.S. Senate, Mitch McConnell, who had Mr. Kasseri on the payroll, who had Mr. Benton on the payroll, both of whom have gotten indicted. Not a whole lot of questions being asked, it doesn't seem at this point, about what exactly Mr. Kasseri was doing for Mr. McConnell during the time that he was being paid by his campaign. It's really kind of astounding. And now we have this burglary that was evidently conducted in order to hide information that Mr. Gamble probably had on his computer. It's really kind of discouraging to know that there's not a whole lot more focus on this, and that a lot of the stuff that we're seeing isn't necessarily being reported by the mainstream press. And we're hoping that they'll wake up and start getting into this and starting to be a little bit more maybe aggressive with their questioning about who did what and when. I know the Washington Post had a good article about it and some of the others, but not as much as you would expect. Charles, the connections between this National Right to Work Committee, this vehemently anti-union organization that's been operating for decades and has been, harassing unions and trying to, bring the labor movement to a crawl, counts Mr. Kasseri as a former employee, longtime employee, Mr. John Tate, the other one that was indicted, Mr. Mike Rothfeld, also another player in this whole campaign for liberty scheme related to Ron Paul, and Mr. Paul's former chief of staff, Doug Stafford, who came directly out of the Right to Work Committee when Mr. Rand Paul was elected to the Senate. You can't deny or you can't overlook that this National Right to Work Committee has played a key role in Mr. Paul's Senate tenure here, as well as some of these campaigns like Ron Paul's campaign. And the question has got to be asked, who at the National Right to Work Committee, aside from these characters that have been indicted, knew what was going on there? And I hope the press starts asking those questions, because they've been overlooking a key element of this whole discussion. One place that really did a nice job was in Mother Jones. They published an article on April 8th of this year, and it has a schematic of the relationships between Ron Paul and Rand Paul and these right-to-work operatives that really reveals the, close relationship and the fact that most of their key people are from the National Right to Work Committee.
Yeah, this is incredible, Bill. And it's incredible to me. At the same time, you were fighting state by state, or I'm sorry, county by county, right to work in Kentucky. Our friends in Illinois were fighting these Governor Rauner free zones that were trying to do the same exact thing as they were doing down in Kentucky. Same language, same attempt for legislation. It just goes to show you that there are no depths that they will not probe to get what they want.
You're precisely right. And I believe that now that this has come out in the press and the indictments have been made public, that folks may start looking at this a little closer. And Charles, it gets back to this whole notion of, there's unlimited money that can flow into these campaigns from undisclosed sources, and what kind of corruption that portends. It's you can't get away from the fact that a lot of this stuff has to do with, passing money around and trying to influence the election of politicians and then influence the way they actually vote. And, Charles, this is just, like I say, this is probably the tip of the iceberg. I have a distinct feeling that if the media does its job and really starts getting into the details of this and asks the right questions and federal agencies continue to probe, that there's going to be more revelation, shall we say, about who did what and what they knew. Charles, I gotta wonder, you know, why would a person like Senator Mitch McConnell hire Mr. Casseri when it had already been known that he was under a cloud of suspicion in regards to this bribery scandal of the Iowa State Senator? It was already out there. And then he goes and hires him and pays him through his corporation in an obvious attempt to make sure that there was no campaign finance report with Mr. Casseri's name directly on it.
Right. Bill, I don't know what to say, but stay on top of it. We got to keep our eyes open, and that's why we talk about these things. I think we're going to be hard-pressed to see anything coming out of Fox News on this, but there's always the hope. You know what I mean? Meantime,
well, I'd like to just see him to come out of the regular the media, the reputable media, and have them go out here and start asking these questions.
There you go. Bill, we got to get going. It's always a pleasure. How do we find out more about you and the Kentucky AFL-CIO?
KYAFLCIO.org. KYAFLCIO.org will get you to our website, Charles.
Absolutely, brother. We'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. It was Bill Londrigan of the Kentucky AFL-CIO. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you hanging out with us for the afternoon. We enjoy your company. In the meantime, folks, do me a favor. Go to our website, www.theunionedge.com. Download the free app for your iPhone or your Android. You can listen to this program live anywhere in the world. You can listen to podcasts. And it can help you do all kinds of other wonderful things. More about that to follow later on. Hey, right now, we're talking with our friends from Progress Michigan. We've got Lonnie Smith on the line. He's the executive director. Lonnie, welcome to Union Edge.
Yeah, Charles, it's great